Welcome to the March 5th, 2009 meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board. Let the records reflect that all members of the board are present, and we'd like to seek approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections or changes to the minutes of last meeting?
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes as read.
We have a motion to approve the minutes. Is there a second? Moved and second to approve the minutes of the February meeting. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. At this point in our meeting agenda, anyone in the audience who has or would like to speak to the board on an issue
and the Harbor Department. We have 34 members and 7 board members, and and represent all liveaboards on the bay. Some of those members are in the audience tonight. For the new members of your board that may not know what the liveaboard situation is on Morro Bay, I would like to make a few comments. There are 34 liveaboards on the bay. 21 reside on moorings or slips run by the 6 marina operators. 13 others live on private moorings. Of those, 8 are currently permitted or in some part of the process of being permitted. 6 are unpermitted. The permit fee increase that your board may be discussing this evening will only affect 8 liveaboards. That's only 8 liveaboards that will be affected by this fee increase.
Would you please keep your comments to those topics that are not on the agenda, and the possible increase in the fees are on the agenda, so
okay.
Skip over those for now.
I will try to do that. The Harbor Department and the Liveaboard Association is attempting to bring these other 6 unpermitted liveaboards into compliance. Skip that. I'm sorry. State and local law. I'm sorry. Hang on. after all, bringing in these 6 unpermitted boats into compliance with federal, state, and local laws pertaining to proper waste discharge, proper marine sanitation devices, and operability requirements will assure that the bay, literally my backyard, will remain healthy, safe, and clean. I'd like to add that in the last couple of years, I have rescued 6 or 7 people from the bay after their kayaks overturned or their boats capsized. And all liveaboards have similar stories. In one example, a family with 2 small children capsized their boat. The mother managed to grab her daughter, but the boy, with the wind and current, was swept downstream. I jumped into my dink and motored over to the boy and rescued him. I then motored the dink over to the woman and rescued her and her daughter. By that time, the Harbor Patrol arrived on the scene and pulled the man from the water. Sometimes liveaboards are the first line of security. Liveaboards are an asset to this bay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else?
Yes. My name's Phil Hill, and I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I've been living in this town for about 11 years now, and I too have been a legal liveaboard, for probably about 6 years now. From the first day I was on a boat, it was legally as a resident, and I too am very concerned with the environment that I live in. You know, pretty staunch environmentalist, and that's why I'm also a member of the new Liveaboard Association. I'm the vice president, and the reason I'm here is just to let people be exposed more to live aboards and what we do. And I have my rescue stories, and it doesn't just involve people. It also involves animal wildlife. I participated in a rescue of an immature sea lion that was suffering, and kayakers, guys didn't have a clue with a catamaran. You know, I got one of those under my belt, you know, nursed them along. So, and I'm very, very adamant about what goes on in the environment of the estuary. Always have been. My former girlfriend sat in one of these chairs up here on the Harbor Advisory Board, and that was her. That's how she got there. She was sort of a token environmentalist. So I also want to thank Rick Algert and the rest of his crew, because in all the time that I've been here and everything I've ever seen him do out on the water and in the aforementioned meetings, which I've attended a few of those, has always been really open and communicative. And they're real good professionals out on the water. Every time I've seen them do anything, under a couple of times when it was really adverse conditions, didn't see them bat an eye, and they were really, really good. So I wholeheartedly approve of the job that the Harbor Department has done in responsibly handling their job and working with other people in a really friendly manner, despite what sort of situation they encounter. Temperament-wise or weather-wise. So, and I'll be waiting for that other thing that is on the agenda to land.
Seeing none, we'll move on to items on the agenda then. And the first action item is comparison of harbor fees with other Central Coast harbors and discussion on raising harbor department fees.
Mr. Chairman, do you want me just to launch into a quick staff report?
Yes, I would. I would appreciate that very much.
Good. Good evening, everybody, and for the audience, both here and in the outside world, we will be taking up a report from your liveaboard subcommittee at your April meeting. So that item will be on the agenda starting in April. I think they're going to formulate a recommendation to the board to potentially recommend changes to the ordinance to the city council. I'm sure that will take, well, let's say, I'm guessing that's going to take more than one meeting, but that those hearings will start in April. So tonight's, as you mentioned, tonight's agenda item is comparison of harbor fees on the Central Coast harbors and discussion on raising harbor department fees. I wanted to give you a little background on why we're taking this issue up right now. In 2008, the city hired a consultant to look at our organization and look for efficiencies and ways to ensure long-term fiscal stability in the city. That report came out, it was by a consultant called Management Partners, came out in 2008, May of 2008, had some 40 recommendations in it, some of them relating to harbor services and to other citywide activities that might affect harbor users and harbor services. I wanted to let you know that we're working at Council's direction currently in three areas that could affect harbor service delivery and the harbor users in the future. One of them is to prepare an updated cost allocation study that's currently ongoing. As most of you know, we've talked about this before. The city, the Harbor Fund is an enterprise fund in the city. All of our revenues either come from user fees or lease management fees, or lease management revenues. We do not have, none of our operating expenses or any of our expenses are paid for by tax monies. The usual general fund source of revenues is, of course, tax funds. We do have operating under an existing cost allocation study that has the Harbor Enterprise Fund transfer money to the general fund for overhead costs that we incur because of our existence and that the general fund pays for. Those are services such as payroll, budget, finance, supervisory. A large chunk of it goes for building maintenance functions for cleaning restrooms and parks and the waterfront. So if that is updated, it could affect the amount of allocation that the enterprise fund makes to the general fund, up or down, obviously affecting our bottom line and what we can provide in terms of services. The second area that the city is currently looking at is one of the recommendations was to transfer harbor maintenance functions to a consolidated maintenance department, at least look into it. The council directed us to begin looking and analyzing to see if there was efficiencies in potential consolidation of maintenance services. We just started, or we'll start next week, a time management survey to see what maintenance functions our patrol performs. We'll send that up to City Hall, and it'll be analyzed to see if the council wants to pursue some kind of consolidation of maintenance services. The subject tonight was put on specifically at the council's direction. One of the recommendations in the management partners report was to increase harbor fees. Council passed the following motion. I'm going to read, well, they took this following action, and I want to read it just to be clear. Council directed that a staff report be prepared going through the Harbor Advisory Board with a comparison of mooring fees in other Central Coast harbors and recommended a daily fee for parking at the boat launch ramp. So action item number, or that action item by the council is the reason we're having this agenda item today. In the packet, we've included a survey from last year of services that are provided, fees and services that are provided in other Central Coast harbors. It's going to be hard to cover all that, so I think I'll just refer to that. I imagine many of you have looked at that. There's a lot of information there. But I want to talk specifically about two areas that the council directed us to look at and attempt to get a recommendation from you to the council on how to go forward. And then one area of the liveaboard service fee, I think we need to talk a little bit about too. The other fees, you can ask questions about, we can talk about them, but I'm not going to make a presentation for you. On the boat launch ramp fees, the council has directed us to establish parking fees at the boat launch ramp. We've identified $10 a day range when we go to council with our report back. Your input would be appreciated. Now, on mooring fees, because the council specifically mentioned mooring fees when they took this action, they wanted us to compare ourselves to other Central Coast harbors in mooring fees. And moorings, especially our slips moorings, I mean, all these things they're apples and oranges in a lot of ways. Even the slip here is not the same as the slip in Santa Barbara in terms of services or all the other things. But moorings especially are that way, if you ask me, because there are moorings in Santa Barbara. They're off Cabrillo Beach. They're in an open ocean area, of course, somewhat protected by the Channel Islands. But during the winter, it's a very unprotected area. They have a fairly cheap fee. I think it's $250 a year in Santa Barbara, with the mooring holder having to provide the tackle and gear. And they actually, I think, are allowed to have a system that allows up to 40. And at this time, I talked to them about 10 days ago, and they had 22 only. So they're not fully subscribed, even at $250 a year, and the cost of the gear and tackle provided by the private party. At Port San Luis, we gave you is probably as close as anything, since it's geographically close to. Port San Luis does do provide their own gear and tackle and do the mooring maintenance, charging for repairs, as I understand it, or any work that needs to be done on the moorings once they're inspected. And Port San Luis's quarterly fees range from 84. Let's see, make sure I get this right. Quarterly rental fees are $84 every 3 months to $120 every 3 months. So they would appear to be less than ours. Now, once again, Port San Luis's moorings are not the same as the moorings here in Morro Bay, in the sense that they're very much less accessible. They're not as easily accessible as our moorings. And they're also unprotected during winter storms from certain directions, the wave swell. Many of you boaters know that we often will get Port San Luis mooring holders trying to come up here for the winter, concerns in the unprotected area. City of Monterey, another geographically close location with moorings. They have 120 permanent moorings where the licensee owns and maintains the gear and tackle, which is pretty close to what we have here. Their cost is $140 quarterly currently. They also have 40 seasonal moorings off Del Monte Beach, which they put in, and that's an exposed area. They only put in for the summer, as I understand it, with two-point gear. And so that's gear and tackle provided by the agency, and they charge $92 to $153 a month, depending on size of the vessel, which is pretty close to the fees that we charge. So my analysis of this is that our mooring fees are, although our mooring services, I should say, are probably the most preferable in terms of all three of those situations, of a fully protected situation and fairly accessible, it would appear that our fees are higher than everybody else's already. And so what I put in this report is I can't see recommending the council that we try to somehow achieve some large increase in mooring fees to raise revenues. It's possible the market might bear it, but it doesn't seem to be justified by other comparable fees. If we did want to raise fees, one other way to go with the moorings would be to charge a transfer fee. Right now, we don't have a whole... typically, we might have one, two, three, four moorings maybe transfer every year. There has been, in recent years, a bonus value that's put on the assignment of these moorings. Currently, in our office, there's a couple moorings that are for sale in the $20,000 to $30,000 range. The person, the private party that sells the mooring, does own the gear and tackle. They have a value. We allow the month-to-month berthing agreement to assign at no charge if the party's current with their bills. But there does appear to be some speculation or bonus value that's going into the moorings when they transfer because of basically a demand oversupply. So there would be a potential of establishing a fairly significant transfer fee when they transfer to try and capture some of that and to raise revenues for the city. And I would add that many harbors now do establish transfer fees for slip transfers or mooring fees. So that is Santa Barbara has a very significant transfer fee at this time for their slip transfers. So we went through the moorings, went through the parking lot. The only other fees, you have a lot of other fees that are in the comparison and that we charge. Most of them are relatively small generators of revenue. I should mention the slip fees, of course, are by longstanding policy of the council set low and given priority assignment to commercial fishing vessels who have to qualify every year. The council didn't ask us to compare those, and so I'm assuming that they don't want to change that policy. There probably would be additional revenue certainly to be raised if the council did want to change that policy and go to some kind of market rate on the slips, but commercial fishing vessel, I didn't check. But anyway, we rarely have permitted lip boards in the city slips, but a city slip would pay $28 a month and a conservice fee. Now, you can look at the comparisons, and it appears that those service fees are very low compared to anyone else, and I have often heard those folks who have heard about our live aboard service fees comment that that is far too low. What a live aboard services that they might, additional services they might use would be almost surely they're using city trash, city water, and the bathrooms. And to the extent we feel like it's a fairly low impact, but of course anybody who has a home here knows that, you know, your garbage fees alone are more than $14 a month. So it would appear that that fee is low, and I do feel that we should raise it to something on the order of, say, $50 a month for a mooring service. So I'll throw that out there, and we'll see what reaction you get to that. That would be the end of my report. Be happy to answer questions.
Thanks, Rick. I would like to kind of structure this a little bit because the issue of fees extends, obviously, as he said, beyond those that apply just to liveaboards, and I suspect that many of you are liveaboards and interested in the liveaboard fees. So having said that, I would want to turn the conversation over to members of the board to ask Rick any questions that they might have of him. And then from that point, we will focus on the liveaboard fees first, and then once we've discussed those, then we'll go on to some of the other issues that he referred to, such as the paid parking in the boat launch area and that sort of thing. That's okay. So first of all, any questions board members have of Rick and his report? Gene?
Rick, is the Harbor Enterprise Fund healthy?
I think so. It's we're not in a situation where we can run surpluses. or deficits, being an enterprise fund, like water or sewer, if they need money, and of course we're going through that now with sewer, then they have to raise the fees. Being as we're generate about $300,000 a year out of fees and about $1.3 or $1.4 million a year out of property management. And property management has been growing more than typical inflation in the last 10 years. Our budget is in relatively good shape. But I would add that the downside is, and I really want to stress this, is we also we don't have the money, for example, the office. If we were in really good shape, we would have funded that new office a long time ago. Or we would have been able to fund the North Tea Pier repairs, which have been on the table to do repair that pier for 3 or 4 years. We have to every year balance our budget with our known operating costs. Substantial part of the operating costs is salaries for employees. And we do have substantial maintenance and supply services, too, though, because of all of our, you know, we do maintain all the city water facilities with the exception of those ones that I spoke to you about where the parks and recs and building maintenance folks take care of the waterfront facilities I mentioned previously. And we transfer about $300,000 a year up to the general fund for those cost allocation services. So we have a surplus. I think it's roughly an accumulation fund of roughly $500,000 at this time. It varies a little bit, but
I guess the reason I'm asking that is that if we are relatively healthy on a harbor enterprise fund, then if we should generate any money, additional money in the harbor, it should stay in the harbor. It should not go up to the general fund. Thank you.
Is there are there any other questions of Rick from members of the board?
I have a quick question, Rick. Is there any kind of cost of living increase involved with any of the fees in the harbor?
Yeah, thank you. We have had a little bit of a sporadic history in the last 10 years of cost of living increases on our fees, depending on council direction. For a number of years, we did not do cost of living increases. Last year, you may recall, I think we ran it through the board, we actually did a little bit of a catch-up from 2005 to 2008. And I think a total of 10 or 12% was done for 3 years of cost of living increases on our fees last year. And the council direction at that time was to get with its staff and get back to doing a cost of living increase on all your fees every year. So that's the direction we're under now, is that we will prepare normally in June a master fee schedule update with cost of living increases on all.
Get gradually up there, but or allocate, or what services do they really do use? But I think it's a little bit, you know, to pick on just 30 people to raise, I'm not so sure that's something to do. It's my thoughts.
Are there other questions or comments? Lynn?
Thank you. The service fees are not on this chart, right?
There is a it's going to be hard for the audience, but there is a discussion on liveaboard fees right about midway, just after the big column that talks about slips and moorings. First page. Do you allow liveaboards is one of the columns.
Yeah.
Apologize to the audience out there.
How many?
How many do you have?
Number?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
In this, though, there are also... Well, you already stated that we can't really compare apples and oranges. You can't compare the moorings, living on a mooring, to living in a slip for the convenience factor and, of course, the electricity factor. So I would wonder, the only thing that is really comparable then would be Port San Luis and those in Monterey. And even then, that's where you would have comparable services, right? Port San Luis and Monterey. And Port San Luis doesn't really have any liveaboards.
That's what the survey says, yeah.
Yeah.
It says no.
And I don't know who would want a liveaboard down there. Although I have known people who have done it for short terms, primarily during the summer. but other than that. So when we're talking about fees, the service fees, it's very hard to equate the services of that the mooring, that the people on moorings are getting here with the services that people in other places are getting. I guess I'm tending toward agreeing with Bill that, number one, it's a pretty big jump, and number two, is there any other way of breaking out the cost of the services?
So we have thought about
the
that.
Boards.
That's, I think I got a question there, so I'll, and Bill brought up a similar kind of question, is what would the, it would be very difficult to really try and hard line out what the services costs, additional services costs of livable boards are. I mean, I'm not sure I could figure out how to decide how much extra trash service they might use, or, you know, water or bathroom. I mean, I don't know. I think it's hard to, I can't imagine it really being worth the effort of trying to come up with that, because the information would be very difficult to validate.
Mm-hmm. So really trying to get an increase other than perhaps CPI would be very difficult to justify.
No, I didn't say that. I would argue that based on these comparable other services, and based on the idea that, you know, what a monthly service for trash at least costs, and some minimum level, that there should be some increase beyond $14 a month. But, you know, I'm not, I mean, the reason we're doing this through the board and the opportunity that these folks are going to comment is so that this issue can get out there and be talked about, and you can provide a recommendation to the city council.
Thank you.
Barbara, do you have a comment to make or a question to ask?
I was just thinking that is there any way of finding out what, you know, I mean, what other services are there that are comparable? If you did have to figure out what was being used by the livable boards, it just seems natural that there should be a slight increase, but not the $50. Doesn't make sense, but... yeah, there's like a whole column missing in terms of what's, how they compare, how the services compare to other ports. So,
I'll try to comment on that. I would guess, you know, down at Santa Barbara, I mean, if you're on an offshore mooring there, I can't imagine people using their boats more much, but they must somehow rely on shoreside facilities to get out to their boats, and then shoreside facilities for trash when they generate it, or water, and so... You know, I think it's probably similar to that in all those locations, that on a mooring vessel must rely on some shoreside services for water and bathrooms and trash everywhere. But everybody has the same problem. How do you figure out exactly what that costs? So it appears that many harbors, in looking at the survey information, set a fee that's an estimate, but their estimates are much higher than ours.
Gene?
You mentioned water several times.
Estimated 10,000 plus boat launch ramp users in a year. So one could estimate from that a number. Now that is really reduced because salmon closures and because Rock Cod has now closed 5.5 months a year. It's probably closer to 3,000 or 4,000. And some of those folks are going to be probably discouraged by a fee.
So basically what we're saying is we're going to raise $40,000, spend $22,000, and gain $18,000.
First year, approximately. I would say 40 is even high, to be honest with you. I would say we probably would gain, you know, a better estimate might be $15,000 or $20,000 the first year, and it would take a couple years to pay back the startup costs.
I mean, why can't we, if we're going to initiate something, which I'm not saying that we don't do, something like the San Luis Airport does. I mean, if you get two of those poles with slips of paper in there, if those two poles cost more than $22,000, you're getting them from a place that is charging a little bit too much money. But why don't we look at something like that? I can't believe that two of those machines with slips of papers in there are going to cost $22,000. I mean,
no, we're talking about something a little bit different than the old Iron Ranger. And that Iron Ranger is low cost. You see that still in state parks.
Yeah, I mean,
you just fill out an envelope. But
I just a thought.
Yeah, no, and what we're talking about is an electronic machine where you can use a credit card or feed it dollars, and it will print out a ticket that you then display on your dash.
In San Francisco, in the parking lots there?
Yeah, Pismo okay. Beach has just done these machines downtown. They're for a little closer location if you want to see them. That's where we got the cost estimate.
Okay, any are there any other questions of Rick before we get further into the discussion here? I would again like to turn the board's focus to the liveaboard fees and issues related to those fees. And I would like to reaffirm before we open it up further to comments from you in the audience, to state that last year in March or April, we were asked by the City Council to consider fee increases. And at that time, the recommendation was to increase the fees across the board by 12.1%. And as Rick mentioned, that was an accumulation, the result of not having raised fees for some time. Okay, and the 12.1% increase was a culmination of several years of consumer price index figure. So coming into this year, if there's any fee increases, my guess is they would be reflective of what the consumer price index is this year, if those are ultimately passed on. Liveaboard fees, as I understand them now, and as we've talked about them so far this evening, represent the amount of money paid for the mooring itself, the amount of money paid by a liveaboard for their yearly application, and the service fee. Taking an example of a mooring that the tackle of which is owned by the mooring holder, the cost per month would be $72. The application fee, if you prorated that over the year, would be about $9 a month, and the service fee would be $14 a month, for a total cost to the liveaboard of $95 a month. That would be somewhat higher if you're on a mooring that the city provides the tackle, the ground tackle for. So with that in mind, I think I will open the discussion to members of the board if you have any further comment to make about that, and then we'll turn it over to people in the audience who want to speak to that issue. Any further comment? Okay. If you're in an orderly fashion, if you'll come up and state your name, and if you can, please, we're not going to put the clock on you, but try to hold your comments to 3 minutes as much as standard time, okay?
Okay. Hi, I'm Denise Jacobson, and I'm a liveaboard in Morro Bay, and I'll keep this as short as possible. I had a whole speech here, but you guys did pretty well. You kind of said everything I was going to state. So first of all, to answer your question, it's only 8 mooring. This marina, you get a public bathroom. You're sharing it with the world. You're paying for your water as you use the shower. So to me, that is the biggest variance that would be the difference between fees that you're looking at, the $100 to $300 a month to our $14. So pretty much that's it. Everything else was pretty much said. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Still Phil Hill. Pretty much everything, a lot of the stuff has been said. The fact that we do, by virtue of the space we take up in our living abodes, we don't use a lot of water. We generate very little trash because we're thinking about when we buy stuff, where am I going to put this? Where am I going to throw it away? So our contribution to the waste factor is minimal compared to someone that has a 3-bedroom house or a 2-bedroom house. It's much less, much, much less. The water is much, much less. I like what Mr. Dowdy said about pointing out the fact that the Harbor Department is doing well. It can't go out and buy a whole bunch of new stuff, which we'd all like to do. I'd like to drive something besides a 61 Rambler, but that's what I drive because that's what I can afford right now, okay? And so that they break even and are able to, they got that much in prudent reserve is pretty admirable. And the city, while that's outside of your scope, there's a hell of a lot, heck of a lot of ways to raise money besides hitting, starting with a small community like this, you know? I mean, amongst those recommendations were a reasonable fee increase that was commensurate with other communities for new business to help support the infrastructure. And they turned their back on that and they chopped it in roughly half, okay? That's, we're talking about a lot of money there. You're talking about very little money here that is going to severely impact people. You're talking about $1,000 a year. You know, that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money for me. I don't have to pay that. I'm fortunate. I pay a lot more per month, and I have private facilities. I don't have to take a freezing shower in the middle of the winter where I'm feeding a quarter eater, you know. So I think that a reasonable increase of rates commensurate with a cost of living increase, you know, everybody's taking a hit now. Everybody. The people I work for are taking a hit for. I don't know what will happen to my job. You know, everybody's tightening down. The county's tightening down. So I think we all need to be aware of that, especially the city council, before they go looking, you know, get cheaper paint jobs on the cop cars, for crying out loud. They spent all that money on that damn new thing, those chargers. Give me a break. You want to save some money? There's other ways to boost morale for our local officers. Thank you very much.
Next.
Hi, I'm Steve Yarling. I'm a liveaboard, and I'm one of the few that owns these mooring and that is a liveaboard. I agree that maybe you might want to increase the fees, but the liveaboard service fee from $16 to $50, come on. I mean, you go to any other harbor, and they've got a better bathroom facility for the boaters than we have here in Morro Bay. And again, that's 25 cents for a 2 minute. If you're lucky, the water might be warm enough to withstand. But I find that I've been taking a shower elsewhere because the facility that anybody and everybody uses, and especially if you're talking about increasing that launch ramp revenue thing, so we're going to have a flood of even more people using our poor little shower. I don't know, I think it's a little excessive. That's all I got to say.
Thank you. Rick, may I ask, just in regards to the hot water issue and the public showers, what was the shower facility at Tidelands Park converted from a standard water heater to an on-demand water heater as well?
It's only at the North Tee Pier. I think we're working on Tidelands. Didn't Tidelands Park get done too? I guess.
It has to be gas. Okay,
that's right. There is no gas hookup down there. Apparently, we haven't done Tidelands Park yet. And they're right about the service. It's been unreliable with the hot water. It is much better now at the North Tee Pier with the on-demand water heater. But
That might put some extra pressure on the North Tee Pier shower to know that there's an on-demand hot water heater there. Anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Sky Smart. I'm a business owner on the Embarcadero, and I'm also a liveaboard.
Increase the fees, although we might recommend a change in the fees or no fees or whatever. It is the business of the city council to change fees. So our purpose here is to try to understand the scope of any particular issue and then to advise the council and let the council, of course, do what they wish to do. One question that I have of Rick, I guess, and if not Rick, someone else in the audience, but it was brought up by Mr. Jacobson, the breakdown in the liveaboards as you presented those figures, 21, 13, 8 of which are permitted. I'm not sure I understand the distinction between liveaboard classification then, and maybe Rick could.
You know, I might suggest if you called Mr. Jacobson back up at your request, I think, Drew, you weren't exactly clear in what you were trying to say and how many permitted.
Okay. Mr. Jacobson, would you mind coming back to the microphone and help me understand that, please?
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. To our numbers, there's 34 liveaboards on the bay. Now, not all of those liveaboards are permitted. There are some liveaboards, sneakerboards.
Excuse me. Maybe that's what I don't understand. What do you mean only so many are permitted?
Well,
having a city permit, you mean to
liveaboard? Yes. In order to liveaboard legally, you have to apply for a city permit. You're inspected.
Okay.
And they make sure that you have the right type of MSD.
And how many are, according to your numbers, are permitted?
Well, there's 34 liveaboards on the bay.
34.
Now, on private moorings, and this is what we're really talking about, we own our mooring, a private mooring. There are 13 of us. Eight of us, are permitted, currently permitted, or they're going through the process of obtaining their permit. Six are not permitted, and we're attempting to resolve that.
Okay. If I could add to that, thank you. So I think Drew estimates there's 35, maybe 40 liveaboards bay-wide. He feels that there's 13 on moorings currently, 8 of which are permitted the city. Totally permitted liveaboards in the city now is somewhere in the 20s. I didn't check today, and it kind of varies, but it's, I think, mid-20s now at this point or close to that. So we all obviously have a problem with still some unpermitted liveaboards out there, and I think he feels that there's about 6 of them on moorings.
Right. Okay. Now, a private mooring, you pay the $72 to the city, even though it's a private mooring. By private, you mean you own the tackle.
That is correct. We basically lease it, although we've bought it. We basically lease it from the city.
Right.
We do own the tackle, and every 2 years we're responsible for making sure of the upgrades on the tackle.
Okay. Bill.
One question, if I may ask you. The other question that was
brought up
a little bit was
the transfer fee. You currently bought your mooring within the last year, correct? Did you have to pay anything more than the rate to the previous owner, or no? So what is your feeling on a transfer fee, if I may ask, Drew? We're not talking about a lot, but as, let's say, 3 years down the road, you're going to sell it. What's your concept and your feelings on transfer fees in general, if I may ask?
I understand the city is looking for any monies that they can come up. It's tight with the city. A reasonable transfer fee, I personally wouldn't have a problem with it. There might be others that own their moorings that would disagree with that. Personally, I, as long as it's reasonable, would not have a problem with that.
Lynn, did you have a question or a comment? Did you?
Drew, yeah. When you calculated this, 8 people would be affected. Does that include those who are living aboard and are renting the mooring from somebody else? I know a number of people who are renting a mooring.
Yes.
And they have liveaboard permits. They would be affected by this increase.
Correct.
So did you count those people in your numbers?
Yes. So there's 13
that sounds low.
On private moorings.
Now, on private moorings.
Right. Kevin's, for example, the marina operators have a lot of moorings, but the fees will not affect, at least from my understanding.
The Morro Bay Marina. The mooring fees themselves are $210 a month, an additional $50 if you're on a mooring. If you're on a slip, it is $330 a month plus $100 a month liveaboard fee.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Thank you. Gene, go ahead.
Yes, and excuse me. What started this whole thing was an updated overhead allocation study cost allocation plan, and I'm curious, what would the allocation plan fee be for the liveaboards to perform their act of security and watching over the bay? I mean, they are providing a service to the public for Morro Bay, and I think that has some value.
Thank you. And I agree. Mrs. Jacobson.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. If you're comparing Kevin's facilities to the average liveaboard facilities on moorings, again, they have private restrooms, private showers.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Most of the liveaboards on moorings do not have that. Thank you.
Sure. The private moorings, I take it the private moorings on the bay and those that live on them depend on the facilities provided by who owns the private moorings, right? So if you're in a, if you're
no facilities there.
No, but if there are facilities for those who live on private moorings, they're provided by the person who owns the private mooring.
Yeah,
your mic.
I know there's not a guarantee of that, no. Like, for example, the yacht club moorings and liveaboards that are on our moorings, they use the yacht club facilities. So what facilities they have available to them depend upon the yacht club. So,
yes, I think that's right.
Sky Smart again. I own a mooring that I rent out to somebody, and this last Saturday he wanted to pump out. He only has a 20-gallon hold. He could not find a place to pump out. He went to the yacht club. They turned him away because they were in a race at that time, which is understandable. From my knowledge, there is 9 pump-outs on the harbor that are, I don't know if they're all supposed to be available, but there's 9 places for pump-outs, including where I live at the Back Bay Marina. Bay Marina. So that's one of the facilities that should be there for the people that are liveaboards is having a pump-out station that works. I mean, the one at Tidelands didn't work. The water at Tidelands did not work. So I think this is something that you need to think about also in for the liveaboards.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Further comment? Anybody?
I have a question.
Sure.
Hello, I'm Elaine Serta from the vessel Grand Laney. I have a couple questions. One is this report, this consulting report that you got in 2008 available to the public? I'd like to be interested in what other 40 items that they were speaking of. Also, lost my thought on that second item. That's my main concern. And as far as facilities, they are a little lacking in Morro Bay. We're fortunate enough on our boat we have facilities. I've got 2 bathrooms and running showers and water and we use our own home or we use our office in town where we also have those amenities available. Trash. Generally, take it up to the marina because it's provided by who you rent from. The revenue that you're talking about generating doesn't calculate with me, but I'm not looking at your spreadsheets. I'd like to know if I can get a hold of those also.
So the management partners report that was generated in May 2008 is on the city's website, which I don't recall right now, but if you Google up City of Morro Bay, you're going to end up there. And It's pretty easy to find, and it's listed as Management Partners Organizational Report. This agenda tonight included the survey material that is public document. It's in our office, Mills Stationery, in the library, and we'll be there for a while. If you want to review it there, I'll loan you my copy tonight if you'd like.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any kind of fee increase on anybody at this time, this time that we're living in right now. Last year, when the question of fees came up, I was I said then, and I'll say again today, that I understand that there's increased cost of doing business, no matter what business you're in, that go on constantly, and in my opinion, a cost of living increase that is that occurs regularly each year based upon a fair assessment of what the cost of living is, in my opinion, the best way to go. I suggested that last time, and I'm going to say my piece about the liveaboard fees in a similar way, that that I would, I personally would be in favor of only asking for a cost of living increase, suggesting that the city council consider a cost of living increase on an annual basis across the board for fees that apply, in this case, to liveaboards. And if, now I know that there's, if you look at cost of living, the consumer price index, for example, that fee, based upon my looking at it anyway, would be a fee of about 3.5% for the year. And that seems to me to be the fairest way to apply the necessary fees so that they're not excessive, at least beyond reason. That's my opinion. Brett?
Yeah, Jim, I'd like to add that if the city brought the facilities up to maybe something more comparable to what other people have available to them, that maybe that would be a good time to revisit increasing fees, the monthly fee for the liveaboards. That would seem more logical to me. Considering they don't really have hot showers and the other lack of service. Thank you.
Any other comments? Michelle?
I just like to agree with what Brett said, and I don't see, I mean, I see cost of living increase maybe being necessary, but unless their services are being increased, I don't see why their fees would be being increased. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen anything on this paper really that pertains to what we're talking about as far as the service fees, unless I'm missing it.
Rick, did you want to respond?
If there's a question, I don't think that's easy to compare, but the third column up from the bottom, and I'll hand this out to the crowd here in a second, but it, I think it's list, what are the fees charged to liveaboards, Santa Barbara?
Those are
pretty much service fees. I think one can assume $140 a month in Santa Barbara, $160 a month in Ventura. That's private. Let's go look at public.
That's for moorings.
No, those are slips. So yeah, different level of service, no doubt. And it's good to make that clear. But 75 a month. I'm looking for a comparable public. You can go through that column, 100 a month, 190 a month. I can get a sense where you're going to go, but I'm just going to say one more time that there is free water available to folks. They don't use a lot, but they do use some. Almost surely most people fill up their tanks at the city services. The pump outs we provide free, and they are high maintenance. This weekend I think they were down they're quite a bit of work for us to keep up the two that we manage, and I appreciate the Yacht Club providing that service. You know, we keep it free because we want people to use it, but that is another service that costs money for the city and trash, obviously. So I think we should look at some kind of increase beyond just CPI. So that's, I'm going to warn you that that's probably going to be the my presentation to the council, too, some kind of reasonable. But they will very much appreciate your recommendation. So you should, with that in mind, you should make whatever recommendation you feel appropriate.
Okay. Is there a motion regarding the fees to be made? Anyone have one in mind? Just a motion which would be voted on? My understanding of Lynn's motion is that the CPI would apply to all of the fees that are liveaboard fees. So yes. It would apply to the service fee as well as the...
That's correct.
...point fee. So, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Any further discussion?
You did say that it would be revisited later if the service level was brought up.
I did.
That was part of the recommendation as
I
well.
I did say that.
Yeah, okay.
Mike, if you'd like me to repeat that the fees be increased by CPI until such times as services are increased, at which time you can... Oh, and that the CPI be applied every year, and when services are improved, then the whole issue be revisited.
I have one question regarding the water usage in particular. At my house, the water is metered, and I get charged based on how much I use of it. Are the water facilities that you're referring to that are available at the liveaboards, are they on a meter so that we'd have some idea how much water is used collectively?
Yeah, we do, actually. We pay for water service that is metered in most locations. That North Teepier, I see the meter reader every month. And so, for example, a lot of people might go to the Teepier or the Tidelands Park side tide dock and fill up a tank because there's already water access, water supplies on the T-piers.
Lynn?
Titans Park, the water is used as much by non-liveaboards as it is by liveaboards. That's the problem there. I see people washing down their boats at Titans Park.
It's
and
true.
So that it's hard to factor that in someplace.
No, that's pretty much it.
Just a question here, though. You know, what we're trying to do here is tax or increase 13 people. I mean, I just think that we should be looking at something a little bit broader than 13 individuals. I mean, that's just my opinion. I think it's getting to be, you know, if we're going to look at everything. I mean, there's other ways to look at raising fees that probably would have a more of a general impact and raise a lot more revenue. I don't think we're talking about a lot of revenue. I mean, it's minimal.
The current revenues from the liveaboard service fee are between $1,000 and $2,000 a year. So you're right.
It seems like you get more money going after the required fees for registering people, you know?
Yes. Well, there's the application fee is probably so we spend the time and money on that. I don't think you're going to raise revenue necessarily that way, but it's more an issue with this of to at least try and look at it and make sure for the community that we've considered the equity issues. It, you know, obviously if you double the fee, you're going to raise a couple $1,000. It's not going to save the harbor fund or the city. But it's worth talking about these things, I think, in public, even though they're difficult for people affected by them, just to make sure that we have an understanding of why they're there and if there is an equity adjustment, which, you know, I'm trying to argue that I think perhaps there is because of some basic level of services they use, then at least we've talked about it.
Jim, one last question is that, you know, I'm also on the subcommittee for the liveaboards. We're still formulating, that particular fee with a couple other people out here in the audience. So, you know, it probably will be raised a little bit just based on really what the services the harbor provides for inspections and so forth and so on. I think that, you know, those fees can be addressed in a little later later. And some of the things that we've achieved from this liveaboard committee is, i.e., an association, i.e., as Drew stated here, what the liveaboards do for the city of Morro Bay and for the bay. And I don't think we take that in consideration as what Gene said. So to raise it any more than CPI, I think, would be very fruitless, and I think it would be a slap in these folks' faces that really, I think, provide a heck of a lot more than $1,000 a year to the city of Morro Bay. That is really what I think I'm looking at here.
Any further comment or question? Ready to vote? The motion made by Lynn and seconded by Bill is to apply to the liveaboard fees, across the board liveaboard fees, the consumer price index on a yearly basis, annual basis. There would be more discussion. It would be another issue brought back for review.
I was just worried about what the definition of service increase would constitute.
We have a sense from the discussion so far that the services are lacking to some degree, and there's seemingly a consensus about that. So improvement in the services would have to take place before, according to this motion, before those fees would be reexamined. That fee would be reexamined.
In my world, if they had two showers that had hot water showers for people to use, but now they're not hot water showers, then to fix them to be hot water showers to me would not be a service increase. That would be just getting back to what was supposed to be the status quo. That was the only point I wanted to make.
Okay, thank you very much. Any further comment?
May I say something about my motion? One of the reasons I put that in there about improvement of services is to make a point to the City Council that some improvement of services is merited.
Okay. Are we ready for a vote? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Gene is a nay, and the remainder, as I could hear anyway, are in favor. Is that correct? Okay. 6-1.
Can I ask the board do you want to try and make a recommendation on what the daily fee should be at the Bull Launch Ramp parking?
I'd like to make a motion to do it at $10.
I would like to move to that issue if we're done with this one.
So. I'm sorry. I jumped the gun. I thought maybe you were going to... Okay.
No.
Excuse me.
Let's take up then the issue of fees at the boat launch. My understanding is that there'd be a fee charge for parking one's boat and trailer in the double spaces that are available, that these fees would not apply to the peripheral parking spaces that are there for single cars. Okay.
Well, you know, again, I'll bring up the point is that the one thing that does concern me again is this $22,000 machine or machines. Could you explain a little bit more of that and why don't we go into maybe a less sophisticated apparatus to start off with? I mean, could you explain some of the rationale behind that?
The feeling was that it'd be worth investing in a machine that's more convenient for the user to pay, because we really don't have services down there. We don't have anybody making change and things like that. We could go back to the Iron Ranger. I mean, the council may have the same suggestion. The Iron Ranger would be pretty cheap, probably a couple $1,000 by the time signing, and you have to have signage still. But those things are cheap, and envelopes, obviously.
Brett?
Rick, actually, I did have a comment on that. I've been to some of those boat launches down south that had the Iron Rangers and whatnot, and it seemed like they have to come and periodically monitor the parking lot anyway. So you're still going to have a resource, you know, as far as the harbor patrolmen and stuff patrolling the parking lot. So probably in the long term, it might make more sense to get the more automated version for that reason, for enforcement. That's just my thought on that. Thank you.
Barbara, did you have a...
Mine was the same thought.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I've been to the, most recently anyway, to the one at Pismo, and I believe that's the kind you were talking about. It'll take credit cards, it'll take dollars, it'll take coins. You can do it by the hour, you can do it by 4 hours, you can do it all day. And it seems to work. There is still someone around there that goes by and has to look at the window or up on the dashboard to see that your ticket's there, so that we don't get away from that. But I would support, since I don't think $22,000 for what would be a long-term facility is excessive. It is, and I would rather see us put in better equipment rather than more inferior equipment. I'm not a mathematician, but by any means. But if we had a fee, let's say, of $12 a day during just the rock cod season, we would have to have only about 6 slips per Saturday.
And trying to hit them for $12 or $15 is just doesn't seem right to me. You know, they've got a little car, a little trailer, a kayak on the top of the car, and most of those other parking spaces are filled up. So I think that you're harming the local people. Now, I can understand the big guys with the big boats you want to spend all day, and there probably has to be some fees, but it's really hard for the little guy to come up for 10 or 12 bucks just to go out and sail his boat around the bay for a couple of hours.
My guess is these would be available on an hour-to-hour basis as well as all day. You know, $12 would be a full day's fee or maximum day's fee. But if there's anything like Pismo, you can go in there for an hour if you want. Lynn?
How much is it for an hour at Pismo?
$1.
$1 an hour?
I think it was.
Max,
but this is a car park, you know, there's a single car space.
Okay. We're just talking about the stalls for the trailers, right? Somebody could still drive up, launch something, and then go park their car if it was small.
For example, a car topper could launch a kayak and park in the single car stalls, and there would be no fee. If they have a trailer, they're not supposed to be in single car stalls, although you can detach the trailer legally and park it in one stall and then park the single vehicle in the next stall.
Some of the other parking further down towards the Embarcadero Inn would still be available, wouldn't it? I mean, is that included in the 46 trailer stall?
No. If you're talking about like street parking where trailer towing vehicles and trailers can pull into two parallel spaces along the street legally, I imagine those spaces will get filled even earlier.
Sure.
If we institute this fee.
Okay. Bill?
Is there a provision for some type of, I'm kind of in agreement with Gene, some type of local token that can be obtained for locals, you know, by the Harbor Department, so that those tokens can be put in the machines and so it would be free to the local Morro Bay people? I mean, is there any provision in something like that?
There's things like permits, or I'm sure something could be devised. I'd be real concerned about, we think that this would be a fairly minimal effort for us to, with the existing staff, to go down once a day, and the enforcement's probably going to be about that, once or twice a day as time permits, and look and see who has the paid and who hasn't, and write a ticket on those who haven't. And that's the way it'll work. And if we start setting up some kind of additional program, you can imagine, I mean, this is going to be a real impact on staffing and things if we've got to sort out who's a local and special permits or tokens. I hate to be going that way again, but we need to keep it as simple as possible.
Barbara?
I was just thinking, how do you, how would you force, somebody being out there for an hour, to, okay, that blue boat right there has been out there 2 hours. Get back here and pay another one.
It's the time they're parked in the parking lot.
Oh, the time thing, that's right. I'm sorry. Okay, I lost my other train.
Michelle?
A while back, when we talked about the Iron Rangers, it was originally to deter people from parking their junk there for weeks at a time or months at a time. Is it? And now it's for revenue? Because we had talked before about what Bill was suggesting, maybe a monthly or a yearly sticker like Santa Barbara does for local people, but that wasn't a good idea because of people using that for storage.
Yeah, there's that too, and the management issues at the lot. But and Bill didn't suggest a permit, that was me, so, and probably an idea of a token or something that a local could buy at a lesser cost or something. Possible, but the more you work up things like that, then who's going to qualify as the local, and how do you make sure that we can sell it? We're not often in. Oftentimes, there's nobody in the office on the weekends if they're out. So, you were right. When we discussed this before, there was a lot of management issues. We were getting a fair amount of complaints about boats that were trailer vehicles were just getting stored down there with the assistance of the PD and. We've got rid of a lot of that by being pretty aggressive with ticketing and marking for 72 hours, but it's still going on a little bit, and this would probably help with the management. But, yeah, if you made an annual permit, if you close, one of the reasons I suggest that we don't try and charge the single car stalls is that would force us into giving permits or something to folks who, have moorings down there, and they shouldn't, they have to park a vehicle there every day maybe, and also, if you gave out the permit, you get right back to with people storing vehicles down there, the annual permit or something. So,
I think the machine you're talking about is that I use in San Francisco. I park in a lot there. I go up there about once every 2 weeks. And it's a time issue, but I think there's other variables, too, that can be done so there wouldn't be a manpower issue, too. I think we need to look at some type of concession for the local person because they're part of Morro Bay. That's my feeling. I don't know if we can accomplish it, though, but I'd like to look at it to make sure that it would be minimal management time on the Harbor Department.
I wonder if it's possible just to leave that part of it off at this point. One of the things that I think is more prominent right now is just whether we should recommend charging for fees, charging down there and putting this equipment in and get some idea what a basic fee would be. I imagine that after a year or two of operation, it might certainly be in everybody's interest to revisit it and to see what alternatives we might want to add into the mix. Michelle, did you have a question? Comment? No? Yes. Lynn?
I would hesitate to simply recommend a parking fee and for the risk that the little guy or the little boat is going to end up getting charged because we can't put any limitations on it. That if we recommend a parking fee of $12 a day without reference to either size of boat or whether it's local or a non-local boat, that the little guy would get hurt. Yeah. Gene's neighbors wouldn't be able to go fishing.
It may be sad, but when you park a car and a trailer in a spot, it doesn't really matter whether it's a big boat or a little boat that's on that trailer. It takes up the same amount of parking space. So. I think in terms of setting the fee, we want to set it at an appropriate level that it doesn't unduly hurt the little guy or overtax the big guy. We're not going to have a lot of, unless the fishing improves, we're not going to have a lot of activity there anyway.
That's true.
The fishing's good.
Well, you see what happens when there's albacore, there's salmon, that the whole town is packed full of people with boats.
And when we're allowed to fish.
Yeah, that's true. Barbara.
A dollar an hour seems pretty cheap, doesn't it? It seems pretty cheap, and then if you're a vessel that's going to be out there for 8 hours, you know, a dollar an hour sounds pretty cheap to me. I mean, I would pay that if I went for, you know, out on the bay for...
Maybe it's possible to have some parking spaces indicated as hourly and some otherwise, but if you're going to go out in the ocean and fish, it's hard to tell how long you're going to be gone, especially if you go any distance away. And in fact, I would make even further recommendations eventually that there be some provision made for overnight parking or a two-day, because I know when I brought my boat over here, I frequently would go up to San Simeon and stay the night and come back the next day, in which case I would need 2 days and one night, or maybe two nights even to do that. So,
yeah, I was actually going to say the same thing, Jim. There should be provisions for 2 days. I really like the idea of maybe having some stalls that are designated hourly, if they could do that just by color coding them somehow. If they could allocate just a, I don't know, half a dozen of those stalls to hourly use, that would make sense to me. But with saying that, I'd like to, I think that the $10 fee is very reasonable for the day. Our boat launch services are just as good as anybody else in the States. I've been all up and down the coast. And that's one thing you can't say. Maybe our liveaboards don't have the best of, you know, all worlds, but I think our boat launch is second to none, really. They have fresh water rinse out. They have easy turnaround. They have easy pull-through stalls. Nice. Everything there is very nice. Nice fish cleaning station. We also have to consider the impact of those heavy boats going up and down our city streets. You know, that there's a lot of impact that goes along with those boat launches and stuff. So, I personally recommend we go with at least a $10 fee. I do like the hourly addition, maybe a couple stalls that are just color coded. And possibly explore, and this would be for council, I suppose, explore an annual permit for small boats. And that's
what a motion?
You could leave your trailer and towing vehicle down there for.
Okay, I didn't know the machine would go 3 days, but that's perfect. That sounds. I think that meets all my.
In regards to the overnight part of it too. Is it illegal, since I know in the city of Morro Bay it's illegal to sleep in your car overnight, does that right now that applies to that launch parking lot too, huh?
Right. It's illegal to camp in other than designated campgrounds in the city of Morro Bay. Sometimes it makes sense to have people sleep on their boats down there for security reasons or other reasons, and so that has historically been allowed.
Okay.
In the Tidelands Park area when it's associated with a trailer launcher and a boat.
So it would be possible, and I'm not trying to make this part of any motion, but potentially possible for there to be a fee and for an overnight fee additional to that if somebody fishes one day, stays overnight on their boat, and fishes the next day before they go home.
The way I interpret your motion would be just a $10 a day fee. If they, you know, 24-hour, yeah, it would probably turn over at midnight and you'd need to have the ticket for the next day, then yeah. It would probably be the way it would be arranged. Microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry. A day would be a calendar day.
Typically, I think that's the way it's done. Yeah.
Okay, any further discussion of the motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Jim, can I have I didn't want to ask this question, but, you know, once we put this in, too, there will be enforcement. And then there will be tickets. does the Harbor Patrol write tickets, or is the police department to write tickets? And does that fee, whatever it may be, I mean, I don't really want to get in that discussion, but does the Harbor Department get a percentage of that? How does that work?
The Harbor Patrol and Harbor Department does have authority to write tickets. It's easier now with the administrative ticket process. We have been writing tickets. The revenues from parking fees in the Tidelands should flow to the Tidelands Trust and the Harbor Fund.
Okay. So you would be actually writing all the tickets into the in these 43 stalls. Is that correct?
My assumption is for non-payment of fees, the way the city's set up now, that the Harbor Department would have to enforce it.
Okay.
I don't think the PD will continue to help, and they do a great job with traffic and road. You know, 72-hour parking in excess of 72 hours is a violation of Munich Code and all the other.
So you'll be generating other revenue too for people who actually don't.
There will be some ticket revenue, I'm sure.
Before we leave the fee structure part of the agenda, I would like to suggest to the board that in regards to the mooring transfer fee, that we postpone decisions on that and ask Rick or the staff to come back with a little bit more information on how transfer fees are structured, just more information on it, period. I know in the State Park Marina, if you sell your boat, you can't sell it with the slip. But if you get Associated Pacific's approval, they will charge the new owner $500 to move into the slip. That's all I understand about a transfer fee. But I don't understand how it would work with moorings. So I would, if the board agrees, I would like to have that tabled until. We get a further report on any questions about that.
I happen to be a member of a country club, and it's an equity membership. And when I bought it, the club, which is the owner, actually takes a 25% fee from the seller. That's just how those things work. Now, is 25% excessive? That's something that maybe you can come back to us. But that's the general rule. So, maybe 10%, but I don't think it's unreasonable. You heard one person who just bought it, and usually what it is, again, it's a supply and demand situation where it's tacked on to the selling price, and it just kind of appreciates if there is an appreciation. So.
Oh, okay. Well, is that okay to put that off? There's comments on this. I'd like to hear them, both pros and cons. You shook your head. Tell me why. You're a mooring guy.
I don't know whether I can. Conflict of interest. I'd probably have to step down at this point on that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You do business. Well, it's just a recommendation. There's no vote being taken, none asked for. I'm just bringing it up as an issue related to mooring fees, so you can probably give your opinion, I would think.
Well, there are about 150 moorings in the bay, would you say, plus or minus?
A few less. City directly manages about 75, and there's a little less than 60 that are managed by Morro Bay Marina and the Yacht Club as blocks.
So there's like 130, 140 moorings.
Yeah, in that range.
Okay.
I don't know. That question is new to me. I know Rick Eric has talked about maybe the city maintaining their own, everybody's mooring. I don't know. I don't think that's going to work out very well. I don't know why, right? I can give you an answer, but I don't think so. My gut feeling is no.
Probably I'm confused, too, because, again, I'm not clearly understanding the difference between what is a privately owned mooring and which ones are owned by the city. The Yacht Club does have 25 moorings, and we pay for the every 2 years for all of the tackle.
The rest are all owned by private people. They own the ground tackle. They lease the property from the city.
Yeah.
And they have approximately 100-foot by 100-foot grid that their boat is supposed to stay within.
Right.
They don't all do that.
I'm talking about the ones that the city owns as opposed to the ones that the yacht club owns.
There's seven or eight, I think, moorings where the city has taken the gear and tackle back. So just a quick correction is Gene's right about almost all of them. But of the 75 or so we manage, seven or eight for reasons of, say, the agreement was terminated or the we took some back from Roanoke, so we've obtained the gear and tackle, and we've rent those out at a higher cost, about $150 a month, versus the $70 a month that we charge when the gear and tackle has to be maintained by the individual. And there are costs with the individual. The gear and tackle has value, and, of course, they have to pay for having that inspected and maintained every year, every other year.
On the private mooring owners, there is a city specification for the size, the diameter of the chain, sure. Size of the block regulates the size of the boat can be on that mooring. For the bottom chain, it's normally 1 inch. Then there's a swivel. Then there's usually a top chain, which is normally 3/4 of an inch. But that's not necessarily the case all the time. Some private owners want to have a different kind of chain than other kinds of chain. They may like a long link or a short link. Some people provide their own chain. Some people want a different kind of swivel. So it's all kind of like mixed up. So you have to kind of deal with each one individually.
But there is a minimum standard.
Yeah. 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 And we always meet all of those. Some people have different balls that they want on. And so every boat owner has a different, who has his own boat, he wants his set up the way he wants it set up.
Okay. I better understand the scope of the thing now, and I don't no longer need to make any recommendation, I think. Okay. I believe that takes care of the issue of fees, right?
So we will return with the discussion on mooring fees at the next meeting, and especially with some additional information on a typical assignment fees. And we can do that, yes. Thank you.
Okay. The boatyard development project review.
Since we spent a little bit of time on the first issue, I'll make this relatively brief and just answer your questions, because this was a report asked for by the board on what was happening with the potential boatyard and dry storage facilities we've conceptually designated for the North Embarcadero. We have included in your packet a revised site plan. It's still very conceptual, but it does show, I think, 12 spaces for boat repair in the area we talked about previously. Shows a dry storage yard, shows the sites, the travel lift pier. We've also reported to you that we've applied for a grant to the Ocean Protection Council's 2009 Fisheries Challenge Grant Program for design development money on a low-impact development boatyard. Unfortunately, that grant program is frozen at this time because of bond fund monies have been frozen by the governor. But they will become unfrozen at some time, and we hope area that would really work. And so that's the reason we focused in on that area. It goes back to 97, and that report is available on the city's website. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the board?
I'm sorry. Gene? Go ahead, Gene.
Rick, on your little diagram right here, the boatyard area that's designated in the white, the line that designates all the way around there, is outside of that deemed what we feel is environmentally sensitive habitat, or is just an area that you guys decided to be project boundary?
Yeah, I think they're trying to show more the project boundary, but they did. It's a somewhat ambitious project boundary that would take some movement from the Coastal Commission on the habitat designations.
Thank you.
Brett?
Yeah, Rick, I had some questions about the funding of the boatyard. California Fisheries Fund was mentioned in here. Is that regarding the construction of the boatyard, not permitting, but actually just construction?
Yeah, it wouldn't. We're not there yet. Even it's a grant application for $180,000 to do 30% design and more site analysis and permitting and a detailed cost estimate. It's a probably a three, you know, depending on the size and things, but this is roughly probably a $3 to $4 million project. So it's typical design costs are in line with typical design development costs, just to get us to a place where we could potentially know the cost estimate, the actual cost estimate of the facility, and do a bid package.
Okay. On this end, question right now.
So this diagram that we have is just it's an example of the proposed. I mean, it's not.
I would call it a conceptual plan. It's you know.
There's going to be a changes made to this.
Yeah, as you get into the detail, it always works out.
I went, wow, there's this wonderful boardwalk that we have and the bike path, and then they're putting one over here too, but they don't really connect. It's a little detail missed. It like, how do you get from this bike path, you know, crossing over Coleman Park, which is like a freeway, Coleman Park Drive, you know, there's no place where people, if they were here, could go over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that and looks like continue it needs north to be made up somehow.
Like, are we going to have like a little bridge, a footbridge over Coleman Drive, you know?
I hope not. There has to be some way to cross.
Some way to cross connect, safely, because there's quite a bit of traffic there on Coleman Drive, you know.
Any other? Lynn?
Yeah, the travel lift says 60 to 70. As I remember, we were talking about 100. I think this is just an older one, or have we discarded the 100 and gone back to 70?
Well, that analysis we did, I think, had two scenarios, one with a smaller travel lift and one with a bigger travel lift. So this obviously is showing a 60 to 70 ton one.
Regarding that size of a lift, what size of a boat can you get out that's 60 to 70 tons typically?
Yeah, thanks, Polly. So Polly's telling me, I guess, Ed Ewan must have been in the office today saying couldn't haul out the South Bay with a 60 or 70
you
ton.
You couldn't?
It's probably close. Anybody want to help me out? Could not.
Yeah.
Is it definitely more?
Yeah, it's close. It's
close.
Just probably a little light.
Yeah.
The one that sunk wouldn't have been able to haul out there.
Susan Diane?
Is that the
one? Probably not. Yeah. That's so that gets you back to 100 ton.
Yeah. Probably not even 100 ton then, right?
It would probably be there, yeah. 100 ton is going to handle most vessels that would ever come into this harbor.
I think I'd like to see that change brought back into the plan myself. Any other questions or comments on the plan? Well, while you're thinking, I'll just say I see some progress from what we had last year, and I'm pleased to see the plan coming together slowly. I don't understand, and maybe Rick, you can help with this, but they talk about getting it to a 30%. Does that leave 70% of it still undecided, or how do I visualize what a 30% design is?
30% would have most of the details in there, and you give the option of doing a design build contract, or you'd have to take the design to full design yourself. Be an end of a fiscal year. I was thinking more like, I think what they're meaning is possibly not until the end of this calendar year.
Calendar. Okay.
And that's just a guess. It could happen any time, or it could. Right now, I think it's related to the fact that the state has trouble selling bonds.
Gene?
Rick, the $15,000 that we contracted with RRM with, if I understand it, that was for dialogue with the Coastal Commission and refining this site plan. Have they had any dialogue with the Coastal Commission?
We were just talking about that. They're at that phase now when we get this. It's nice. This was a nice opportunity to put this revised site plan in front of you, and the next step is to go get a hold of Coastal Commission and start the dialogue on the habitat issues.
So at this point, none of the issues related to environmentally sensitive habitat have been resolved, nor have the issues of where we would, whether or not we would acquire that centerpiece of property that is used in the plan here, but yet not...
Still owned by the power plant owners. Yeah. Both are not resolved at this time. Yeah.
I'm pleased too to see that that in writing the project supporters and who they are. I'm glad to see them see some of these groups on board with the project, and I'm glad to see their names in print. Any other? There's no action required of us on this, is there, Rick? That you're asking?
No, it's just a presentation or an informational report.
Any further comments before we move on? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on. Information items, Harbor Department status report.
The Lynx 122-foot vessel, tall ship, will be here on April 2nd. We'll be going to CMANC meetings the end of this month. I will be gone from the last week of March, so we'll probably be putting your packet out a little early. We did a great dive training exercise. I want to thank Chuck Rollinson of Depth Perception for organizing it. All hands had a training on rescue training for dive accidents last week, and everybody really appreciated it. It was excellent training. Many fire department employees participated too. We've got a contract that's starting next Monday. Contractor starting next Monday, busting up some of our derelict vessels. And we also have on Monday night's council agenda a grant from the NEP for $75,000 additional derelict vessel demolition fund, so that's great. Thank you very much, NEP. Summer Beach Lifeguard, for anybody out there or anybody on the board who's going to apply, it's open, and the applications close on March 31. You can pick them up at City Hall, and we will be doing the testing on April 4th. Any questions, call the harbor office or city personnel office or go get an application. And that'd be it. I just would, remind you that we're having in April the Liveaboard subcommittee report, taking up the Liveaboard ordinance. I also need to put on your agenda another council requested item. Seems like there's been a lot of them, but the council has asked for the boards and commissions, at least the Harbor Advisory Board and the Planning Commission, to review the LCP conditions relating to uses down south of Tidelands Park in those water areas where there is presently a proposal to from Maritime Logistics to reuse the old wooden dock at Cannery. So we will be putting the question of whether commercial vessels are allowed and should be allowed in the future down in those areas south of Tidelands Park on your agenda for April.
And that'll be an issue for us and the Planning Commission?
That's my understanding. The Council's asked that to be reviewed by at least the Harbor Advisory Board and the Planning Commission.
And you'll have some more information on that coming to us through our packet?
I will when I figure it out.
Has that thing been resolved, the legalities?
The use permit application that Maritime Logistics has made for using the dock is still pending, if that's the question.
One question I have, the Grandy and Sons Construction that do the demolition work, are they, is that a contract that is let by bid, or is that?
Yes, we solicited proposals and bids, and they were the low bidder.
The low bidder, okay. Yes, Lynn.
Which boats have you selected to be demolished?
Selected. We got a beautiful lineup. Then probably the star of the show is Gotham City, the old ferrocement vessel there tied up at the North Tee Pier. That's going to be an interesting project. A lot of them are smaller than that, but that's a 40-foot ferrocement vessel.
Yes, I know it.
Thank you. guys start?
Yeah, it's,